powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Bump and Stacy
on Seattle Sports.
Streaming through the Seattle Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Ross.
Here we go now.
Let's talk Mariners with Yahoo Sports' Jordan Schusterman. He joins us now on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. Hey, Jordan, how's it going?
Hey, guys. Feeling a little bit better, I imagine, than a week ago. It's been fun watching this team recently.
You know, a sweep and then two really dominant performances against a bad team will do that to you. You know what? I was going to start with the Mariners, but I'm actually going to start with a look at the AL West because I have a little bit of a recency thing going on here. We just heard a cut from Jeff Passan, who said he thinks there's a tiny chance, there's a world where this is the season where the Astros drop off. And as a Mariners fan and as a person who covers the Mariners, we've been having that conversation every year. And the answer has always been, no, it wasn't. However, right now, you're looking at the Astros. They're in fifth place in the AL West. Good offensive stats, so it's kind of hard to tell what to make of them. Do you buy what Passan is selling here, that this could be the year they fall off and leave some room for the Mariners to pick up steam?
Yeah, it's really a shocking thing because I think with Houston being so dominant for so long, and I respected what they've been able to accomplish as much as anyone, I was still picking them to go to the World Series again this year. We maybe assumed, all right, maybe the window is starting to close. Maybe they start to take a step back. We sort of saw hints of that last year. I mean, 7-16. I mean, this isn't just like, oh, maybe they're falling. I mean, this is like where they've been pitching-wise, one of the worst teams in baseball. They have a bunch of injuries, have a lot to do with that. But if this is the case, it's hard to imagine they're going to be this bad, but they're digging themselves quite a hole that it's I don't think it's totally reasonable to say that they're going to have some trouble this year keeping up.
I hope the bad times keep rolling, Jordan. I really do. But I want to talk about some good times. Before the season started, Cal Raleigh wasn't considered on, I forgot what list was it, MLB.com maybe. Mm-hmm. Not a top 10 catcher. He's putting himself together a decent year. Stacy and I were talking that we don't expect him to hit, average 300 and be elite in that sense. But we expect him to be great behind the plate and hit bombs. So far, we think he's done that. What are your thoughts on Cal and his year so far?
Yeah, it would appear that even though players generally don't care about those offseason lists, it would seem that he has taken that personally, as he has been one of the best catchers in baseball. And I actually had a conversation with someone in the Reds press box last week after they had, of course, just been in Seattle. And so someone on their broadcast team was marveling that Cal had these power numbers hitting in Seattle and understanding how hard it is to do it there on a consistent basis. But this is what Cal's done, right? Two straight years leading all catchers in home runs. He did it in the minor leagues as well. And when you combine that with someone who's obviously still so valuable defensively, yeah, that's what makes him one of the most underrated players in the game and clearly a very steady presence in every sense for this team when they've needed it.
A third year of him leading all catchers in home runs and not making a top 10 list would just be egregious. I'd be writing a letter to the commissioner. Let's talk about Julio, obviously the star of this team, one of the biggest stars in baseball. He had a slow start to the season, and it's always so tough because with a guy like Julio, Jordan, you know he's great. Like, you know all the potential is there, and you just sit there and you're stumped and you try to figure out what's going on. Is there anything you saw from him earlier in the season compared to what you've seen in his last couple games when he started to heat up?
Yeah, I would say that he's still chasing a lot, right? So, like, I will say, here's a fun little stat I just found coming into this, because Julio, you know, he's still looking for his first home run. Five straight multi-hit games, which out of nowhere is already tied for the longest streak of any player in baseball this year for multi-hit games with Ohtani earlier this year. So that's how quick he's able to turn it on. Now, I think we're still waiting to see him kind of impact the ball, in the air. That's not something we haven't seen as much. And even some of the hits along this way have been more of the bloop variety, which is fine. I mean, he needs to see some fall before he really starts to get going. Obviously, the plate discipline numbers are not especially encouraging right now. But the thing with him is, as we've seen, his ability to impact the game defensively and on the bases is what is going to make him be a good player essentially no matter what. But now if we could see his bat get going, I mean, he's still very, very aggressive. He still hasn't quite found his groove, but it's been nice to see him have some fall in for him, because I'm sure that will translate to some actual more substantial production here soon.
What's been the biggest surprise with the Mariners this year? Going into this year, I always have lower expectations, at least at the beginning of the season. I feel like this roster is built in a way to where they got to warm up. They got to catch their stride, right? You just talk about Julio Rodriguez and him trying to find his groove. But what has surprised you about this roster so far?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, when you overhaul the offense to this degree, you're going to be keeping your eye on a lot of those new faces pretty closely. I think a lot of fans definitely still waiting to see a little bit more from guys like Polanco and Garver, who were kind of billed as the big acquisitions that were going to improve the offense. Whereas Mitch Haniger, you know, Mariners fans have seen him be great. And so even coming off the season he had last year, I think a healthy version of him playing well is not especially shocking. I think we got to shout out the third baseman. I know Luis Urias left the game yesterday injured, but what him and Josh Rojas have been able to do from just kind of a steady production standpoint at the bottom of the lineup and slowly improving defense as well, I think that's been really good to kind of keep them afloat as some of those other main bats have started to heat up.
Obviously, we've seen the pitching turnaround too, and we knew the pitching was going to be elite for this team, but it's been really reassuring to see it look so great. And I feel like look so great is not doing it enough justice for how some of these guys have looked of late. What have you seen, Jordan?
Yeah, I mean, I wrote a big feature about the Mariners rotation right before the season. And, you know, 10 days or so into the season, I'm like, oh boy, this is maybe not what we expected. And there were some weird
stuff.
Yeah, there was some weird, you know, bad ball luck, especially for Kirby, I think it still has a lot of bad luck. But man, you see what Bryce Miller's been doing. You see what Logan Gilbert has been really getting on a roll. And then you see the performance Luis Castillo is able to deliver in Colorado. They've been the best pitching staff in baseball for the last 10 days. And I would imagine that is, you know, health permitting, which you have to say for every team. And it was great to see what Brian Wu looked like in his rehab start. This is what they're capable of. And yeah, there are a couple new faces in the bullpen making it happen, but this rotation can be very special. And I'm not surprised that they've already reminded us of that, even, you know, as we're still in April.
The tough part about the beginning of the season is that you take on the Red Sox, you don't know who they are. You take on the Blue Jays, you don't know who they are. Same thing with the Cleveland, I almost call them the Cavaliers, baseball, I mean, NBA playoffs. Cleveland Guardians. We didn't know who they were. But now we're into the season and we have an idea. The Guardians are leading the Central. Then you have Boston and Toronto in a fight in the East. What do you make of the start of the season now that we have a better idea of who their opponents are or were?
Yeah, no, that's a great point. And I think as we see series like the sweep of Cincinnati and trying to understand, okay, where do they kind of fit in relative to the Cubs, who you know, maybe looked a little bit better in the series before. And Milwaukee, another team that, you know, Seattle struggled with when they went there earlier in the season. That's clearly a team that we should be taking a lot more seriously than maybe we originally expected. But it's still early for every team. I think we are definitely starting to get a sense. You don't want to overreact too much. But I thought you were bringing this up and kind of leading into what we're going to see this week, right? I mean, Texas is another team that has certainly benefited from the slower starts from Seattle, from Houston, and of course the rest of the division. But I think this will be a really, really good opportunity because they've had some struggles in Texas recently, more so in Texas than in Houston, believe it or not. And it'll be interesting to see. I know Texas is still injured on the mound a lot, but they can still bang. So this is going to be an interesting opportunity for the pitching staff to continue to prove itself this week.
I'd love to actually focus a bit more on that. Just a closer look at Texas here. So I haven't been watching their season closely. I'm just kind of looking at the standings. You write it down in your scorebook, you know, you take a glance at it, and it's been shocking to see Houston sitting there at fifth. Because Texas has been in first, you're not thinking too much about it until you realize, like, oh, they're at 500 and they're not putting up great numbers either. Tell us a bit about what's going on with the Rangers, the good, the bad, maybe the challenge and opportunity here for Seattle.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think with them, you know, you're looking at a team where they're definitely missing some key pieces on offense. They just got Nate Lowe back. And then the pitching staff, I mean, Lorenzen looked great over the weekend. You know, he's kind of seeing what he can do for them as they added him very late in the process. They're still hoping to get Scherzer back at some point. Of course, DeGrom, they just lose Cody Bradford. So the pitching staff, as many are, like Houston, is in kind of a messy shape. But honestly, on offense, no one has really been like super tearing it up besides Adolis Garcia, who has seemingly not slowed down after his unbelievable October. But like, we haven't really seen Seager get going. Semien's been solid, but nothing special. But they just have so many average to above average hitters that it is still a comfortably top 10, if not top 5 lineup. And especially at home, I think this will be a real challenge. And yeah, you know, it was nice to see how well Seattle could pitch in Colorado. That's impressive no matter who's actually batting. But this is going to be a real test for them because these are the bats that have really been kind of kicking their butt over the last couple of years.
Let's go across the league for a little bit, man. What team has been the most impressive to you so far?
Yeah, man. I mean, some of those central teams. I mentioned Milwaukee. I mentioned Cleveland. I've seen both of them kind of in person in recent weeks, and have been super impressed. And man, I just looking at the National League West. I think we knew it was going to be interesting in those three middle teams, and I've kind of changed my mind about those three middle teams: San Diego, Arizona, and San Francisco. Many times, I think the Mariners. I believe they have Arizona coming up after this series against Texas. And I think that will be some really good kind of interleague matchup to kind of see where they rank. How about the Mariners getting to face the two pennant winners in back-to-back series? It's kind of an interesting schedule fluke there. So that'll be kind of fun. And they got the Braves after that. So yeah, the National League is as messy as it gets right now. And that's of course what makes it fun, but we have a long way to go. It is still April. We have to remember.
Kind of sticking with that, I was just in the Bay Area this weekend, and I always go around and visit local sports bars or whatnot. So I found myself in Oakland and in San Francisco, and there's a name that keeps popping up, and I really don't know anything about him. And so I'm hoping you could enlighten me. But sorry if I'm jacking this name up. Jung Hoo Lee.
Ooh, Jung Hoo Lee, yeah.
Tell me about this guy. Why are people so excited about him?
Yeah, no, I've been super excited about this guy for a while. So Jung Hoo Lee, who the Giants signed, he's basically been the best player in the KBO, in the Korean League over the last few years. I remember watching, you know, when KBO came back during 2020, before any of the other leagues, I got super into the KBO and kind of kept it up for a few years and have still followed it really closely. This is just a really impressive athlete who, you know, he doesn't necessarily look as physically imposing as you're going to see some of the other, you know, most impressive hitters across the league, but clearly his contact skills, elite contact skills, his ability to play center field has translated immediately. And he has more pop than you think. He did hit a homer to right in San Francisco. He's been one of their steadiest hitters so far. And the Giants, it's been frustrating because they added so many new players, including him, and they still kind of are stuck in the same malaise that they were for much of last year. But I think Lee's been everything you could hope for and more. And I'm excited to see him continue to translate, because as far as him adjusting to major league pitching, it's already happening a lot faster than his former Kiwoom Heroes teammate, Ha-Sung Kim. It took him a couple years to really get settled. Jung Hoo Lee looks great already, and he's really, really fun.
We saw the debut of Jonathan Clase for the Mariners, obviously maybe a little earlier than a lot of us expected, filling in for an injured Dom Cinzone. Sam Haggerty wasn't available. He's still coming back from injury. Actually, he's back, but it was surprising, but you thought, well, maybe he's the best of their options. My expectations were not high necessarily. I was like, I know he's bringing speed, but like, I don't know what to expect from this kid. And he has impressed me so much and has been fun to watch. What were your expectations of him? Has he surprised you? And just tell us a bit about your outlook on maybe some optimism of what he can do here.
Yeah, I think he's basically provided exactly what you could have hoped from an energy standpoint, right? I mean, I think this team was so badly looking for some sort of spark, some sort of energy. And it's almost, you know, almost too on the nose when you watch him play and have him, he goes for, you know, the inside the park home run, and right, you see the kinds of hits that he's capable of getting. I mean, listen, is he really ready to be getting everyday at bats in the big leagues right now? It's hard to believe that that's the case. And you've seen him look overmatched at times, but for what this team was really looking for, I think he's already provided that. And it'll be interesting to see if they continue to roll with him. I kind of doubt it, but if I feel like he's already kind of passed the test and provided what he needs in this moment. And it'll be interesting as he goes back to AAA, which I am assuming is going to happen in the next few weeks as everybody else gets healthy. He's put himself in a position where you can very easily imagine him being a factor in the second half again, even if he isn't going to stick with the club in the short term, because his offensive game has just evolved so much over the last few years. He's so much more than just one of the fastest players in minor league baseball, which he is that. But if he can kind of provide that spark and just a totally different style of player than really they have is really exciting. So I'm happy for him. I agree with you. He's kind of exceeded my expectations so far too, but I would assume he's going to go back to AAA in the near future, and then hopefully we'll see him again in the second half.
He is Yahoo Sports' Jordan Schusterman, kind enough to join us on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. Jordan's podcast, Baseball BarBcast, has a new episode that came out earlier this morning. Go take a listen. Thanks so much, Jordan.
Thank you, guys. Always fun.
Thanks, Jordan.
Let's get to Headline Rewrites.
Headline rewrites.
We must make headlines.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Bump and Stacey.
Headline number one, Camp Chancellor and Richard Sherman sounded off on the Seahawks' decision to remove pictures from the Pete Carroll era. Cam said, you can't erase the Legion. The standard is already set. And Sherm added, Pete hung a Super Bowl banner. No other coach in franchise history has done that, but it's on brand. What's the real headline?
These Seahawks greats are in our history books forever, but they're also in their feelings right now.
Oh, yeah, they in their feelings. I don't understand part of Sherman's response. It's on brand. What exactly is on brand about
this? I don't quite
get
it.
I don't get it either. I think, you know, he was probably just going for a hot take, and he got it. As far as these two, look, there are two ways to look at this. As a player, I think I would understand it. Cam was one of the most feared players in the NFL for a long time.
Definitely.
Sherm was one of the best corners in the NFL for a long time. And they did something that no other team has done in Seattle, which is bring home a Super Bowl. But I think what they're missing is you're not erased from history. Like you talk about the Cowboys, San Francisco 49ers, the Steelers. They have a history of winning Super Bowls. They have more pitchers to put up that they can handle. So when you look at those facilities, I bet you Joe Montana ain't in the same place he was 5 years ago. I bet you Emmitt Smith is not in the same place. Things move around as players come in and out and you get different coaches. They're not erased. That banner's still in the indoor facility. There are still places in the facility where you see this guy. A Super Bowl display case. You go to Lumen. You walk down that hallway to the press box. Yep. You see Wal Jones. You see Warren Moon. Steve Largent.
You see them all meeting Obama.
You still see this stuff. I think maybe they got the information wrong. You're not erased. There's just one hallway. I haven't been there yet, Stacey, but I can imagine the hallway. You know what hallway I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
There's one hallway where they're waiting to put up pictures of the current team. You're still going to have the tip by Richard Sherman. You're still going to have the big plays by Bobby Wags and KJ Wright. It's still going to be there. I think that maybe they're overreacting a little bit, and I think it's partly because of how they got the information. Cam Chancellor is one of the best human beings I've ever met in my life. And he is right. The standard has been set. When you think of the Seattle Seahawks, you think about the Legion of Boom. You're not going anywhere. I promise you. The chord has changed just a little bit. It might be a little bit of overreaction.
It's so funny, the difference in the tone from Richard Sherman and then someone like Michael Bennett, who when we spoke about the Legion of Boom in that era of Seahawks football told us.
Yeah, Seattle fans, I know you guys miss us, but just let us go. let us wither away.
I died when I heard him. You can hear me on the audio. This is from months ago because I do always think, like, yes, there is a part of you that always wants to celebrate history. And as someone who grew up in Seattle, Bump, you essentially, I know you're from LA, but you've spent half your life here in Washington too. You know that there's not a ton of championships. This is not Boston, okay? Yeah. It's also why I hate Boston. Everyone, this is part jealousy because they have so many championships from so many sports leagues. You brought Seattle its only Super Bowl, and there is a lot of honor and pride and everything with that and respect that comes with that. There's also a level, there's a part of me that always wants to yell, move on to the next thing.
Yeah.
And it's not moving on from history, but it is looking forward to what's happening now. This team has not been to an NFC Conference Championship since they went to the Super Bowl in 2014. That doesn't mean they haven't been a great team. It doesn't mean they haven't been a good team. It doesn't mean they haven't been successful. It doesn't mean I have not enjoyed watching so many fun games. But, like, I feel like we all hang on to 2013, like in a chokehold, and we don't let it go. And this is about what this club can do now.
Mm-hmm.
No one from 2013 from that Super Bowl team is in that building on that roster. Nobody. They're trying to prove that they can get there, that they can set up their own legacy, that they can prove something. And I think what's probably happened here, and you've said this, the wrong version of the story has gotten to these Seahawks players. Mm-hmm. If I was Cam and I heard they took down all your stuff, I'd be like, what? I gave my all to that organization. Yeah. If I was Sherm and I heard they took down a big picture of you, I'd be like, but I brought the city a Super Bowl. Like, what are you doing? But that's not the full truth of what happened. So I think there's a game of telephone going on by the time it reaches these legacy Seahawks.
Guarantee they're still representing that building.
Yes.
Headline rewrites.
Headline number two, Brian Wu threw three perfect innings in a rehab start with Tacoma on Sunday. Struck out five on only 35 pitches. What's the real headline?
I don't think he needs any more rehab. Bring him back.
I'm saying, hey, take your time. Take your time. This rotation is looking good right now. We heard cuts from passing talking about Miller and all his stuff. We see Walter on the mound doing his thing. Castillo looked good his last time out. This should give this organization some reassurance that there's no need to rush this young man. I can't wait to see him when he gets back. I can't wait to see Santos as well. I can't wait to see this rotation in the bullpen at full strength because they've kept this team in the mix so far. So, yeah, I can't wait to see them. Take your time, baby.
Someone says, hate for Boston. Shift that to the Yankees in Houston. Oh, I got plenty of hate to go around to all three of those
cities.
They
can all get it.
Yeah, they can all get the smoke. I got enough to go around. I don't like Boston. I don't like the Yankees. I have love for the Knicks and Mets, though.
Yeah.
I do. So I don't hate New York as a whole.
I like the Mets because
I got love for the Jets.
You know, I grew up a Dodger, and Mike Piazza went over there and did his thing. So
yeah.
I got love for the Mets.
I don't like the Yankees, and that's it. Like, I don't even, yeah. I'm not bothered by the Giants. I am unbothered by the Giants. Astros, I hate. Texans, I like. so it's, yeah, everyone has
San Antonio, I respect.
Headline rewrites.
Headline number three, every home team won game one of the NBA playoffs. Denver off to a 1-0 start in their series with a 114-103 win over the Lakers. What's the real headline?
Bump, you better hope the Joker gets bored with success like he does with everything else.
Yeah, he's they've won 8 straight games against my Lakers. 8 in a row. They are the better team. They should get this done. I'm just asking for one win. Just give me one. We got swept in the Western Conference Finals last year. That was not a great feel for me. Just win one game. Put it together. Old man LeBron, hold it together. Come on, baby.
You're listening to Bump and Stacey on Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app. One team in the AFC has new jerseys. Plus, we heard some interesting things in a pre-draft press conference from an NFC West GM. Don't go anywhere.
Bump and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacey Ross.
Let's talk about a trade and a draft class. Following the Zach Wilson trade to Denver, 4 of the 5 quarterbacks taken in the 2021 first round have already been traded via Adam Schefter. Here's the 2021 draft class. Number 1 overall pick, Trevor Lawrence to the Jags. Congrats, Trev, you're still there and you're going to get an extension. Number 2, Zach Wilson, Jets, traded to the Broncos. Number 3, Trey Lance, drafted by the 49ers. That one's still surprising. Traded to the Cowboys. I liked it at the time. Number 11, Justin Fields, drafted by the Bears, traded to the Steelers. And number 15, Mac Jones, Patriots, traded to the Jags.
Hey.
What a class.
You know, what a class. But this is how it is. This is the NFL. This is the impatient NFL at that quarterback position. If you don't get it done quickly, they will show you the door and look for the next best thing and say, hey, I hope you're ready to start and lead the team to a playoff appearance, or you're out of there, man. It's tough out there for a quarterback. I don't feel too bad, though, because their bank accounts look pretty good.
Yeah, that's the thing. Zach Wilson, you were still a number 2 overall pick, have more money than I ever will. At the same time, there's a lot of criticism. I have thin skin. I wouldn't be able to deal with some of this, you know, the hate and the failure that he's experienced. Like, that's really hard. I hope that he finds success in Denver. I think Denver's still going to have their eyes on their franchise quarterback of the future. What's really interesting, though, is you look at this class, and Bump, that is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 quarterbacks taken in the first round in 2021. We're expecting fully that 5 quarterbacks will go in the first round or could go in the first round in this class. It does make you wonder if, you know, in 5 years we're going to be looking back at 2024 going, man, I thought that guy would be a sure thing. Now, it could be the same thing. Number one overall, Caleb, you know, Williams, maybe he's still with the Bears and it's totally fine. You know, everyone knew Trevor Lawrence would be number one. Mm-hmm. Everyone knows Caleb is going to go number one. But after that, Drake May isn't a sure thing. Jaden isn't a sure thing. Penix, Bo, JJ, these guys could all go in the first, less likely for Penix and Bo. You don't know for sure. Like, you wouldn't bet on any of these guys.
I ain't betting on Caleb.
You aren't betting on Caleb?
Nah. Nobody is for sure in this league. What did the number one pick do last year?
Nothing.
Nothing. Nothing at all.
Be a nice guy. Help his teammates. 49ers GM John Lynch was talking about Brandon Ayuk, says our wish is he's here for the rest of his career. Here he is talking about those negotiations and where they stand.
Before, you know, questions, you know, I know a couple years ago there was a lot of talk about another receiver, Debo, and I said the same thing, but with B.A., you know, B.A., I've communicated on a couple occasions, on many occasions, our wish. And our wish is that he's here and a part of the Niners for the rest of his career. You know, we're working through that. And, you know, as such, you know, I was a player once and I never liked my business being out in the public. And so I'm going to respect that. I'm not going to speak for their side. I can say we're having good talks and I'm just going to leave it at that. And we'll focus on the draft here today. But that's just want to understand you guys have a job to do and respect that. But that's kind of the tone I'm going
to
take there.
The 49ers want Brandon Ayuk to stay with San Francisco. Bump, let's pretend we live in a world where news has come in on draft day that Brandon Ayuk has been traded. He's no longer in the NFC West. He is not on the 49ers. What does it mean for the Seahawks? What does it mean for the West? How much does it actually affect that team?
The Niners? I think they still be all right.
I know. That's what's so frustrating about it. I mean,
Brandon Ayuk is the best receiver they got, but you still got Deebo. You got Christian McCaffrey.
Isn't that wild?
They will address – this is a deep receiver draft. They'll address that late in the first round, maybe in the second, whenever. I think they're still going to be okay, man, and that is unfortunate for everyone in NFC West.
It's so wild to hear. Yeah, you could lose your top receiver, the best wide receiver on your team. They'll be fine.
Yeah.
I'm still taking them to win the division. Still like, taking them. God, just unstoppable. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about potential trades and chaos we could see in the top five on Thursday. So the top four, I'll throw in five, though it doesn't matter as much. The top four teams are going to be the Bears at number one, Washington at number two, New England Patriots at number three, and then you got the Cardinals at four, Chargers at five, Cardinals and Chargers, neither of whom expected to take quarterbacks. They have theirs, but that doesn't mean that the trade starts there. In fact, Diana Russini of The Athletic saying the New England Patriots are listening and taking calls from teams looking to move into number three. She's told that President Jonathan Kraft is heavily involved in the decision-making. Kraft family, keeping it in the family for that organization. And then GM Elliot Wolf is kind of running point on that, but they are open to trading. Meanwhile, tossing this in from Adam Schefter, there's a video from the Cardinals, because they're openly advertising this. They're also open for business at number four. We could see trades at three and four in this class.
The one that would baffle me is New England. Like, yeah. I think you need to draft yourself a quarterback unless they feel like they can go get themselves a veteran and want to build outside the quarterback, then work inside to the quarterback. I guess I understand that. But three and four... If three and four are gone, I expect Minnesota to have moved up. I expect Denver to have moved up. They both have said, look, we are willing to make a deal because we need a quarterback, even though Denver did just sign Zach Wilson. Love that pick. And they're both doing the same things. Minnesota signed Sam Darnold to 1 year, $10 million. Denver signed Zach Wilson to 1 year, $5.5 million. Go ahead and let those guys be your starters and teach these young fellas, man. I love the chaos of the first five picks right now. I am here for this. I love to mix it up. And again, if four quarterbacks go before your Seattle Seahawks, maybe even five. If five go, because we're looking at the New York Football Giants and saying J.J. McCarthy, he's been connected to him. It just makes 16 that much more attractive. Makes it more attractive to teams behind them, too, if they're trying to move up in the draft. So I'm here for the chaos. New England, I wouldn't recommend it, but go ahead and move your pick around and switch this thing up.
Do what you want to do. It's how I feel if a friend asks if they should get some insane tattoo or maybe an ill-advised piercing. Just, you know, it's your body. Do whatever you want to do with it. That's how I feel about New England trading out of it at number three. Like, you absolutely should not. You absolutely should not. But do what you want to do.
You hear the black folks saying that they don't really agree with it. They go, hey, if you like it, I love it. That's how I feel about
exactly
this right here.
It's the same way that I hang up the phone when I don't want to talk. Well, I should let you go.
Hey, I'm going to let you get out
let
of here.
Let me let you go. Congratulations to Matt Ryan. He formally retired from the NFL today. He's a current CBS analyst, but still made his retirement official. What a storied career. Obviously, the Super Bowl just evaded him in that amazing year for that Atlanta offense and for him. But still, he was the face of the franchise for a long time there. And presumably is going to have a really fun career in the booth. Congratulations to Matt.
First ballot Hall of Famer. 62,000 yards, number seven all time. Aaron Rodgers is going to pass him up. Maybe even Matthew Stafford catches him. He's at 56. But Matt Ryan, that year where he tore up the NFL and made it to the Super Bowl, it was fun to watch, man. Matt Ryan, appreciate you. And he's good on the mic, too, man. He's good.
Let's head to the NFC East, which I find to be an especially intriguing division. I mean, you could make the case for any division, the AFC West, NFC East, whatever it is. But here's why. You have the Eagles, who have been, to the Super Bowl and lost, and then, had a great run last year and completely fell off. There's all this drama going on over there. They have their quarterback, so you wonder what they can do. You have the Giants, who paid their quarterback a ton of money. He's clearly not the answer. Will they take a quarterback in this class? And then you go and you look at a team like Washington with the number two overall pick. What are they going to do? But maybe none is more interesting to me than a team that is not going to be drafting a quarterback at all. The Dallas Cowboys. The Cowboys are too good to not have any postseason success the way that they have been. They have had three consecutive 12-win seasons, and there is all kind of controversy going on about whether or not Dak Prescott can actually lead them there and whether or not he's the guy. He told fans at a charity event he's not concerned right now with the pace of extension talks.
I'm not going to say I fear being here or not. I don't fear either situation, to be candid with you. I love this game and love to play and love to better myself as a player and my teammates around me. Right now it's with the Dallas Cowboys. It's where I want to be, and that's where I am, and that's the focus. And after the season, we'll see where we're at. And if the future holds that, then if not, we'll go from there.
2021, 12-5, first in the division, lost in the wild card. 2022, 12-5, second in the division, lost in the divisional round. So you have one playoff win over the last 3 years, despite being 12-5 in all three of those and winning the NFC East in all three of those. Do you give Dak another shot? Do you give him an extension?
An extension?
Do you give Dak an extension?
Nah, I don't think so. I think it's time after this year to part ways. He's pretty much doing what Tony Romo did when he was a quarterback. So what they're going to do is they got Trey Lance over there. I don't think he's a real option. I think they draft a quarterback eventually or try to move a veteran over there. Honestly, if I'm them, that's what I'm trying to do. We talked about the quarterbacks who are available next year. I think there are going to be a few veterans that are attractive. Dallas Cowboys, you don't get it done this year. And get it done for me is just win a dang playoff game. Too much talent over there to not win at least one
playoff game.
Come on now.
You look at their stats. They have been top five in points per game in each of the last three seasons, including number one in points per game in two of the last three seasons. The only season when they weren't was in 2020. I think Dak was injured for a good portion of that. Dalton was their leading passer. But otherwise, they were sixth in points per game in 2019, first in 2021, fourth in 2022, first in 2023. You have nothing to show for it. You have one playoff win.
You know what? This weekend, I entered the 16th hole, and all I had to do was bogey two holes in par one, and I would have cracked 80 again.
Yeah.
Didn't do it. So it doesn't matter. All the stuff the Cowboys do during the regular season look great, get all this primetime television. Jerry has his own press conference after the game, which is crazy
wild
to me. I mean, you have to win games when they absolutely matter. They're great to watch during the regular season. And I like Dak Prescott. Been through a lot of his career, you know, his personal story with his brother and all that stuff. I've heard nothing but great things about him. But at some point, if you can't win the big one, you got to move on.
You're listening to Bump and Stacey on Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app. Hey, pick number 16 can be fun, you guys. I know it's not pick number 5. I know it's not pick number 1, but we're going to go over the best mid-first round draft picks in NFL history. That's next.
Bumpin' Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Ross.
So this is the point of this segment. 16 can be a fun pick. On with Wyman and Bob for the John Schneider Show, John Schneider talked about how tricky it is to draft mid-round. And he's not wrong. We asked Brian Walters the same question. He gave the same explanation. There are guys there that are exceptionally talented. You can find guys there that could maybe even alter your franchise. It is just less common than finding the locks that you're going to find in the top five. That's not to say that there are never busts in the top five or in the top 10, but that you're probably more comfortable. You have fewer red flags, obvious red flags, the higher up in the draft that you're choosing. When you start looking at like some of the greatest quarterbacks to ever play, you're going to find a lot more first rounders than you are six rounders. You're going to find a lot more number one picks than you are number 32 overall pick. It doesn't mean that one of those isn't Lamar Jackson. Look, there are gems that you can find everywhere in the draft. The point is that there are some really fun ones that have been found at 16, between about 16 and 20. So I'm going to look at some of the best mid-first round picks in NFL history. Yes, if there's one that you remember that I don't mention, there are a lot of drafts to go through. So I got what I thought were some of the most prominent ones. So just kind of to go over some of these. Number 16 in 1985, Jerry Rice. Number 17 in 2020, CeeDee Lamb. I'm mixing it up with a couple different positions and going a little bit later. Number 24 back in 2019, Josh Jacobs. You got Derwin James at 17, Jair Alexander at 18, Eric Armstead at 17, Chandler Jones at 21, Marquise Pouncey at 18, Troy Polamalu was a pick number 16, Steve Hutchinson 17, Sean Alexander 19, Randy Moss 21. I mean, there are guys here. Marvin Harrison, whose son will be in this draft, at number 19 back in 1996. Bump, How do you feel about drafting in the mid round in general, the risk that you might take on if you do trade back?
I don't think it's as big of a risk as people are making it out to be. You just mentioned a whole bunch of guys who were drafted around that area who balled out. I got my own list. You mentioned CeeDee Lamb, mm-hmm. baller, Brian Burns, baller, mm-hmm. Tremaine Edmonds, baller, mm-hmm. Marlon Humphrey, baller, yep. Zach Martin, baller, Cam Jordan at 24th, baller. I mean, look, are you going to miss sometimes? Yeah, most definitely. But I think it's almost like in a fantasy draft. I hate going first in a fantasy draft.
What?
I hate going 1-5. I hate it.
What?
I hate it.
I've never gone first in a fantasy draft. I've always wanted to.
No, I've gone first, I've gone third, and I've gone like fifth before, and I don't like it. I'd rather be, especially in a snake draft, it's a bit different, but I'd rather be towards pick 8, 9, 10. And the reason is because the guys who, there's so much pressure to pick the right guy early, to have the number one pick and say, this is my guy, I'm going to roll with him, despite what other people's opinions are. Maybe they think someone else should be number one. But as guys start getting eliminated, it's like, all right, next best guy's up. And now there's a pressure that comes with number one that is a privilege. You have, it's a privilege because your team was garbanzo, but now you have the privilege of taking that number one pick, and you have to get it right. And a lot of teams want that pressure. I would want that pressure. But if I would change the way that I'm thinking, I'm looking at 16 and saying, all right, you guys go ahead and eliminate a whole bunch of these guys. Go ahead and eliminate some guys that we're not even looking at anyway. You got 5 or 6 quarterbacks or maybe 4 quarterbacks that the Seattle Seahawks aren't looking at. Go ahead and knock those guys out. Maybe someone's going to take a risk on a linebacker. Go ahead and knock that guy out. We're not looking at drafting a linebacker until maybe later in the draft. Maybe there's a tight end. Maybe Brock Bowers is on that list, and as soon as they knock him out, they go, cool, now it's narrowed down to 2. So it's all perspective when it comes to the way you look at your draft position. I get the excitement of the number 1, 2, 3, 4, but typically those are the teams that need quarterbacks who are in that position. Most teams, if you have a baller quarterback, you're not going to have the number 1 through number 5 pick. Mm-hmm. You just look at the quarterbacks who were balling last year. Tua, where's Miami? Not up early. Jared Goff, where's Detroit? Not nope. early. Nope. Dallas with Dak Prescott, Josh nope. Allen, Brock nope. Purdy.
All in the 20s.
They're all set. They're yep. like, okay, we're good at that position. Go ahead and let the peasants fight over these quarterbacks who no one really knows how it's going to work out. We'll sit back and draft for need our best available. So I look at 16 a bit differently. I look at that spot and say, I think you're in a great spot. Quarterbacks are going to go. Decisions will be made for you. Once it gets to you, they've narrowed it down for you.
Mm-hmm. I think that I really liked kind of building off of that, a point you made in 4-down territory a while ago, and it ended up being an article on Seattle Sports, so then I reread it, and I was like, God, this is such a good point, and I feel like when we were live during the show, I was like, oh, yeah, that's fair, and then I look back, and I was like, I really like that point, which is, it depends on your needs in the class that you're in. If the Seahawks had pick number 16 and badly needed a quarterback, well, guess what?
Tough. You better try to move up.
Tough for you, because mm-hmm. you are going to find maybe the 5th best quarterback. You know what I mean? Like, you're going to overdraft Michael Penix or Bo Nix? Like, that's really too tough for you. If you are at pick number 16 and you badly need a defensive player, it is not a good class for defensive players, but you're going to get one of the better ones at pick number 16 because yes. there's going to be such a run on wide receivers, quarterbacks, tackles, and a mm-hmm. tight end ahead of you. But yeah. you, if you're at 16, you could get the best corner. Yep. The second best edge rusher. Like, there is opportunity there.
Like, why are you at 16?
Right.
You're at 16 because you are good enough, but not quite great.
Right.
So you're sitting there. You're not in desperate need of just one position. You got a couple spots you got to fill, but the most important position, you're probably solid when it comes to the quarterback spot. And then, obviously, you have your teams like Minnesota who's figuring things out, Denver who's figuring things out. Denver, that's all on y'all. Y'all took Russell Wilson in that contract, and it didn't work out for you. You got Las Vegas at 13. Las Vegas, that's all on y'all. Y'all rolled the dice on Jimmy Garoppolo, didn't work out for you. Some of these people, or some of these teams are there because of their decision-making. Other teams are there because, look, we like what we have, we just didn't have enough. That's the way I look at the Seattle Seahawks. If they really felt that Geno was not the guy, they'd be doing everything they can to try to move up in this thing. They think he's good.
In the last 30 seconds, I would like to answer a very important question. Someone said, why on earth would you want to pick first? You don't pick again for an hour. I have never picked first in my fantasy league, which is called the League of Corruption, because it's corrupt and because I truly believe there's collusion going on, and I've never picked
first.
Did
you name the league?
No, I don't know where it came from. Shout out the league. I've never picked first. It's a snake draft. I almost always have been like 10, 11, 12.
That's the spot.
But that's what I'm saying. Here's the deal. The strategy is completely different. I have never had the top five running backs. Like, I've never had Christian McCaffrey on my roster. I've never, the best quarter or the best running back I had on one of my rosters was Nick Chubb last season.
Okay. Poor baby.
Yeah. Thank you. I have suffered, but the strategy is totally different. If you go 12 in your fantasy league with a snake draft, Patrick Mahomes might be your first pick. Or your second pick. Like, you're going, it's a very different approach, but you're not getting Travis Kelce. You're not going to get Justin Jefferson. You're not going to get Christian McCaffrey. You're not going to get any of those guys.
It's all good.
It's just tough. I'm just saying, like, your traditional, in your mind, how you've always played fantasy is a little bit different.
I like the back-to-back or the couple picks within four or five. I'm with that.
I want to be the Browns when they were awful. I want number one. I just want to mess it up every time. Every single time.
That delay, though, from pick one to pick, what, 24?
You have a delay next? No matter what.
That's a long time.
No matter where you are in the draft, you have a delay. It's just in your head that you think it's going to be that long. But when you do the snake draft and you go 12 and then number one, you still have that long delay.
That's the initial delay at number one. Your first delay.
Yeah, but you get the best player. You get the best player. Yeah, but I mean, if you were going number one in a fantasy league this year, who would you take?
Probably Christian McCaffrey.
Right.
Yeah.
So.
I'd roll the dice and go Pat Mahomes sometimes too, man. If he can drop 50.
Number one?
Things. Yeah, if he can drop 50, who knows?
Yeah, he stayed pretty
I feel like healthy. Lamar's got to be up there too because you get the running and the
See,
the
you would think that. Lamar was on my team last year, and even in an amazing year from Baltimore, it was like. It was give and take. It was kind of a slower start. It was weird. This is enough. We've now gotten completely off the rails. We're talking fantasy draft, and we need to be talking about the Seahawks draft, and that's what we're going to keep doing next. Don't go anywhere.